Would you be seated, please? Now, I'm sorry to tell you that your order of service contains a bit of false advertising. This is not a homily. It is the annual charge to the vestry of the parish. So I hope that doesn't mean that it is without any kind of spirituality, theology, or faith. In fact, I assure you that it is not without these things. 90 years ago, September 29th coming, Feast of St. Michael and All Angels, this cathedral building was opened and dedicated to the greater glory of God. I invite you to imagine what this space might have looked like on February the 24th that year. Have you ever had home renos done, anybody? Can you imagine? You can imagine. All right, good. A dream as yet half born. A hollow stone building, towers soaring with hope to the heavens. This nave loud with workers and their equipment. Chaos organizing itself into the beauty of holiness. Noise into a sanctuary of silence. And a longing for a house of faith in which to love God and from which to love one's neighbor as oneself, soon to be fulfilled. We hold in our memory these brave benefactors who had a dream, a great, big, complicated, bold, and expensive dream. And they knew that that particular moment in history belonged to them. It was theirs to decide, after the second cathedral burned, if Christ Church Cathedral would have a future. Theirs to decide if their dream was worth the trouble. Well, we are the beneficiaries of their courage, their generosity, and their vision. Now it is our turn. It is our turn first to revisit our vision for this cathedral. It's no secret that the place of the church in Canadian society has changed radically over the past 60 years. Fully 25% of Canadian adults declare themselves in the census to have no religion. They're even called the nuns. Not that kind of nun. Welcome, sisters. They don't like to be called nuns, by the way. They like to be called sisters. Whatever we did in those glory days, in those bulging Sunday schools and family services and great big youth groups, it may have worked for us who were there and who are here now, but it didn't work for our children, did it? Which is why it is madness to think that our salvation lies in getting back to the way we were. So it is no wonder that many congregations are rethinking church and what makes for a vibrant community of Christian disciples, a community bound together by their commitment to the practices of their faith and to being the face and hands of Christ to the world. In other words, it is time, in this time, to take stock and to be clear about this cathedral's job. The religious word for this is mission. Can we describe succinctly and snappily why this cathedral community, so I'm not just talking about the building, but why this cathedral community matters? why anybody should care that we are here. After all, Jesus Christ did not come to establish the church. Christians did that. Jesus came to show us God's vision for humanity and the world. And the church rustled itself together in order to join effectively in the work that Jesus began. So the question we need to ask ourselves again and now is, in this time and place, that is early 21st century, not 60 years ago, 90 years ago, 15 years ago, right now, in Canada, in a world that encroaches upon our comforts every night in the evening news, and here in downtown Victoria, what is the work of Jesus? What is God asking this cathedral to do and to be? It is time, in the words of the prophet Joel, to dream dreams and to see visions. Beginning this spring, we will undertake a wide-ranging process to assess this, our context, to explore our understanding of what it means to be a follower of Jesus right here, right now, and to determine what we are being called to do about it. I truly hope, I just have to tell you, that in this process we can get past the usual kinds of platitudes that characterize many church vision and mission statements. You know what I mean. The parish of Podunk strives to be a welcoming community who proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ through worship, education, compassion, and loving service. Or even to love God and to love our neighbors as ourselves. I'm looking for something pointed and contextually specific, something that can drive our decision-making and our priorities, something that will fire the imagination of all who would belong here, something that will actually bring us just a little closer to God's dream for the world. Further, I am confident that if the Spirit of God has its way with us, or his way, or her way, or however you like to refer to the Spirit of God, we will quickly come to realize that, like our forebears of 90 years ago, we are going to need to rethink how the space we have on this whole city block can best be harnessed to the achievement of our dreams. For as the church changes, as society changes, our needs change too. I came to Sunday school here in 1959 and 60 and 61 and 62. Okay. We no longer require a whole memorial hall to run a Sunday school. See, our needs have changed. But we do require something more than that memorial hall to run our school. Our needs have changed. We don't actually need 900 fixed seats in a cathedral that is full maybe twice a year. Our needs have changed. And clearly, there are considerable shortcomings in our current configuration. These hamper our ability to do even the things we are already doing. So, for instance, today, we will use a downstairs kitchen, which is not much larger than my own, to service an upstairs meeting for a minimum of 80 people in the only room we have, which is large enough for our purposes, but which has very difficult acoustics, poor lighting control, and iffy ventilation. Please don't let that scare you away from coming to the meeting. But more to the point, it's not just solving our problems. I suppose that's one reason to do things differently. But more to the point, I'm curious to know what kind of a space we would need to enable us to fulfill the dreams that God places in our hearts and minds. For form, as they say, follows function. If we know what we want to do, we'll have a much better idea how to do it and how to house it. I have said a number of times that I believe the time has come to revisit with our partners, the diocesan office, the diocese, and our school, the future of this cathedral precinct, this city block, a project which we have been calling lately Building for the Future. Now seems to me to be the propitious moment, not least because both our school and the cathedral need to talk about their futures. The status quo is not sustainable for either one of us. And so that means we're motivated. And we have an opportunity to work together in a way that will benefit us all and continue the good work which is already underway in deepening particularly the relationship between the cathedral and our school. Now, it may seem completely counterintuitive to be talking about capital expenditures in the context of the cathedral's ongoing deficit budgets. I get it. I made very clear 3 weeks ago, as have other documents which have been posted online or mailed to members of this parish, that the cathedral is in a very precarious financial situation indeed. This year's budget projects dipping into our dwindling operating reserve for $193,000 in order to meet our expenses. At that rate, we will deplete the operating reserve, bring it to zero, 1 year from today. Which means, of course, that we will no longer have a financial cushion to tide us over when revenues don't meet expenses. This is a very serious matter. And if this cathedral community and buildings matter to us, all of us need to do everything we possibly can to make up this shortfall. So, how can we even be thinking of building for the future? Well, in response, a couple of points and a true story. First, a building program would not be funded out of our annual giving. Most people, when they make their gift to the church, they do it out of their regular income. But major one-time projects, they tend to be funded from another source. Maybe it is securities, maybe it's a savings account. It's rather like the way we finance major projects in our own homes. Most of us don't write the check for the kitchen renos out of last week's paycheck, do we? So this is sometimes called the two-pocket theory of giving. This pocket for regular giving, this pocket, which we don't go into very often, for really important one-time giving. But even more important, while there's no doubt that a large project would require a significant fundraising effort on our part, a project of any magnitude could only proceed if we had a partner or partners who were willing to cover significant costs in return for some kind of consideration. So maybe that is the sale of a piece of land, or the use of land, or the sale of density rights, or some other arrangement. Here comes the story. I should note that many churches have entered very successfully into such arrangements. I myself was once the rector of a parish in Toronto that had been on the verge of closure, and the bishop had made the decree. They were in decline numerically and had been for some time. They had fewer than 75 people spread over four services in a church that seated 600 or 700. And they had a quote for $900,000 worth of urgent repairs. That would be $4.2 million today. Through a redevelopment of their property, that church came to be one of the few growing parishes in the Diocese of Toronto. Now, their sale of land, they sold a rectory and a parking lot and of air rights, it wasn't just an infusion of cash to sort of prolong the inevitable. Who's interested in that? Let alone was it a magic bullet. Presto, oh, new building, everybody will come. No. The real reason that parish looked into the abyss and then undertook a major project was five elderly women who marched on the bishop's office one day and said, "Bishop, do you know where this church is? And are you crazy?" The parish, by the way, was 300 meters from the provincial legislature, 500 meters from the University of Toronto's central campus, across the street from the Royal Ontario Museum and two hotels, next to the chichi and exclusive Yorkville shopping area, and populated by glue sniffers who at the time were the lowest of the low on Toronto's strata of street people. Those women could see a need for a church. They could see the possibilities for ministry. They had a vision. But that wasn't what turned the heart of Bishop Lewis Garnsworthy. What sealed the deal was when they said, "And Bishop, we will do anything." These five women, the stalwarts of the place, what the clergy like to call the old guard, became permission givers. They were at a crossroads, they had a dream, they devised a plan, and they created a space and a community to pull it off. Which brings us full circle to Christ Church Cathedral, Victoria. We too are at a crossroads. Thankfully, we are not in numerical decline. In fact, we are growing. We're back up to 6 members of Synod. That was a good thing. Our bishop isn't threatening to close us down. But we do have to make a decision about whether we intend, as a community, to hunker down, or whether we intend to do anything that God asks of us. And if we are able to enunciate succinctly and snappily why this community matters, and if we are able to dream God's dreams, then we shall also be able to attract both the people and the money we need to bring them to fruition. I have already said that we will spend time this spring working on our purpose and our strategies. Once we have broad strokes in place, it will be important for us to come together at least once in a special vestry meeting to test consensus and to develop some next steps. I expect that this would happen sometime this fall. My plea in closing this charge is that every person will do his or her very best to protect time for these conversations. Because, my friends, nothing less than the year 2109, 90 years from today, is at stake. Amen.